People who are just like me, each one has a story to be told. Years ago when they were younger, life was filled with love and laughter, and they thought that in the shade of Table Mountain they'd grow old. People lived among each other. I'm your sister, you're my brother. Lines of faith did not seem to divide. Memories come rushing to mind, sadness laced with smiles. Silver Tree, Trafalgar Baths, and Hanover Street. People everywhere, children running, banjo strumming. Folks knew how to share. Then the dark clouds blocked the sun, and after all those years, just the sound of falling tears. All around in my city, people who are just like me, each one has a story to be told. Eyes are dimmer, hair is gray, but they all still seem to pray to the shade of Table Mountain.
Hello, my name is Teresa Smith, and I am your host for the next hour. Sit back and listen as I talk to five very interesting women who are doing some amazing work in and around South Africa. The song you just heard was Trudy Rushen's In the Shade of Table Mountain. It was originally written for a documentary about District 6, but it is now a bit of a favorite of mine. Trudy is a singer-songwriter who just happens to be one of the founders of the Knit and Natter Group here at Artscape Theatre. The Knit and Natter Group is a woman's own, every woman project, where we get together to, yes, knit, crochet, and talk. I will tell you a little bit more about the group at the end of the show, but for now, let me just explain that Women's Own is a networking organization based here at Artscape Theatre. We meet at the Women's Own Library Hub, which is next to the box office, and we are 11 years old this year. The organization is organized around the concept of story. We do book launches and book club, we do story cafe and walks. So Women's Own helped to organize the annual Women's Humanity Walk, which started today and ended here at Artscape this year. Today being Women's Day, there's a lot that's happening at Artscape Theatre, but it's not all about just today. So let's talk about what's happening at the theatre for the rest of the month. Now to do that, I've invited Artscape Theatre's CEO, Marlene Leroux, to run us through some details on the Artscape Women's Humanity Festival, which this year is themed Milestones, celebrating, supporting, empowering women of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Marlene does not need much of an introduction, so let me just point out that she's an activist who has never met a worthy cause she cannot get behind, or a person she is not happy to see. Hello, Marlene, and welcome to the Women's Own Hour.
Oh, this is absolutely always a Humanity Day on the 9th of August. And we just came from the Humanity Walk, a walk of inclusivity, a walk that always symbolizes what we stand for as a country. And it has included women, men, and children. And the statement and the banners of organizations that says that all lives matters. It is just something that we've experienced once again. And there are young people here today. And this is what it is, that the flag and the torch, the flame of empowerment, but the flame of taking responsibility of a society, that we must always believe in the kindness and be kind to people, and to look at also, we walk today to say no to dehumanizing and objectifying of women, and also to say we need to embrace the LGBTQA plus community. It's very important that we must never forget where we come from, but we must also walk towards the light.
Walk is always a fun thing to do on the 9th of August here at Artscape, and there's a lot of people here. But beyond that, what else can people come and do at the theatre for the rest of the month?
On the 9th of August, the music is by the Cape Whalers Field Band, all the way from Akasa. Come and please experience. We are now being after the Humanity Walk. We're having this. And we have performers by Alzana October, Diana Ferris, Lebo Mashinifani, performers by Jazz Art, Cape Town City Ballet, South Roots International and Zip Zap Circus. Come to Artscape now. Come and enjoy yourself with a purpose. And then we will have Dope St. Jude at 3 o'clock that's going to perform a special hour long, which is of utmost importance. Then, again, we're going to have in the arena A Mother's Words, commemorating 30 years since the murder of Amy Beale. Come and experience from totally desperation. The Amy Beale Foundation of Hope has been founded. And then on the 12th of August, we have The Witness by Karen Larson, Meeting of the Story Club, presented by Balisa Nati. But most of all, right through, we're going to have an exhibition that's going to tell the stories of women, of gender-based violence, that we must never forget. Women that died by the hands of their beloved. And this exhibition by Karen Bestes is digital. She had a name that we never forget. The women that should have never died. This festival is about to give a face, to give a name for the invisible of gender-based violence and the dehumanizing of our society. The iconic festival is also about that we are saying also we're celebrating with Judge Rihanna Parker for the 100 years that women could be judges of in court. So we mustn't forget Sissy Gould. We can't forget Fatima DK. And we're also celebrating the 80 years old of our wonderful Sandiwe Magona, marking her 80 years, yes, writing The Yawning Void and Sandiwe's Gift, a presentation by ICU Young Women's Mentoring Program, which is going to be on the 26th of August. And the highlight for me is that we're going to the community on the 27th of August at Gugusthebe in Langa, where we're celebrating and commemorating with FMR, our fine music radio. And on the 20th of August, we're going to be in Mamre. Yes, in Mamre.
Okay.
With Liv, in Liv and Liet. It's a wonderful organization that was started by persons with disabilities. And they going to starting with a high tea because they want to build an empowering center for the community in Mamre and for persons with disabilities, to give back to the communities, but also to be a safe home for persons with disabilities. So we're saying as Artscape that our festival that is for 17 years in association with so many groups, but with Women's Zone, we are definitely beating the drum through the arts. We're saying we can make a difference. But during this month of August, the Theatre Centre on Cape Town's foreshore will be the focal point for women's empowerment and the arts with the Artscape Women's Humanity Festival. So be part of it. 20,000 women in 1956 had the courage to march against past laws and racial oppression. So be that person with your young boys, with your young girls, men and women. Have the courage now on the 9th of August and the month of August in 2023 to come and be part of celebrating, supporting, empowering women of yesterday, today and tomorrow. Be part of the change.
Thanks, Marlene. That's all we've got time for. There's a lot happening this month at Artscape, and we will, in fact, be talking to Fatima Dike and the judge and Haley from ICU later. So we'll find out a little bit more about those projects.
Thank you, Teresa, and be the change.
Now, let's listen to some jazz while I queue up the next guest. That was As a Flower Blossoms, I Am Running to You. It's a short jazz piece of the seminal Pat Metheny album Secret Story. The vocals you heard are sung by Akiko Yano. She's a Japanese pop singer who was actually married to the composer Ryuichi Sakamoto, who died earlier this year. And you'll hear the music of both Metheny and Sakamoto on FMR quite regularly. You will also see our next guest at Artscape Theatre quite regularly from time to time, not only to watch a show, but to work. Fatima Dike is a playwright from Langa. She's the first black female to have a play published and performed in South Africa. She celebrates more than half a century in the business this year, and the first play that she wrote for the stage was put on at the Space Theatre in the late 1970s. And then the second one she did was called The First South African. And we're going to be talking to her about that work and what else she's been doing at Artscape today. So hello, Fatima, and welcome to the Women's Zone Hour. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you very much, Teresa.
So I have actually interviewed you for newspaper stuff a couple of times here at Artscape. And I know you have a very long relationship with the theater. So where did that relationship start?
I started working at the Space Theater first.
Yes, in the late 70s. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, in the 70s, in 1972. But then in 97, Professor Mavis Taylor, who was the principal of the drama school at UCT, was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Ooh, okay.
And she brought together all her former students and friends and got us to run her project, which was here in Athlone called NATA.
Okay? Okay.
It was a performing arts project.
Mm-hmm.
And she was teaching black kids mostly and colored kids drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was teaching 10 subjects of that. So that's how we got to work there, because she was going to die.
Okay, and she wanted to pass on a legacy.
Yes. So okay. That's where I ended up finally connecting with Roy Sargent.
Oh, okay.
Working at the Baxter mm-hmm. at that time.
Okay.
And he was running a program called the New Writing Program.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he was inviting new writings, okay. So I had to put up a production for the end of the year of the students at mm-hmm. New Africa Theatre Association, where I was working, but I'd never directed before.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go and ask Roy Sargent to come and direct my first play, The Sacrifice of Kelly, and that's how I met Roy.
Ah.
So when Roy left the Baxter, he went over to Artscape mm-hmm. and took his writing program to Michael Maas, who was the then director of mm-hmm. Artscape. And then in 2006, I was invited to be part of the board, but mm-hmm. just a small role where I would be advising them on artists and, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we got an office in Artscape, and we started the Artscape New Writing Program,
uh-huh.
I think it was 2007. And that's where my relationship with Artscape started.
Okay.
And it didn't stop there. It went further, because in the olden days, when they were still forcing black schools to read Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
teachers had a problem understanding Shakespeare's language. And because we were already in the performing arts, they would come to us and say, listen, we have a problem here. So that's when we started performing Shakespeare for the black schools. And then what would happen is that at the end of the performance, the actors would come and sit on stage, and the stage manager would become the person who takes questions from mm-hmm. the learners about anything that they did not understand.
Okay.
And so, yes. So this thing that we started eventually became a legal program within the education system. And it is now called Theatre in Education.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. Right. Also, I brought that to Artscape. So all the set works, English set works that are read by grade 12s, we would perform them as Siyasanga Cape Town Theatre Company,
okay.
the company that I formed with Roy Sargent.
Right. So that's just one of the programs you've worked on. So what for you has been one of the productions or programs at Artscape that you've appreciated working on the most?
Well, I loved the new writing program.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because my role was to read the scripts that were sent in by black writers.
Okay.
And it gave me an opportunity to share my knowledge of writing with all the up-and-coming black writers who were sending scripts.
Okay.
And then what was lovely about the program was that every year there would be one or two black writers whose plays would end up being performed and published.
Oh. Okay. So I was actually sent an interview that Dean Smuts had done in Fair Lady with you in 1978 that was talking about the first South African, which is something yes. you'd just written at that time. And then you explained in the article how the play was about the creation of the idea of the South African identity. So I was wondering, if you're looking back at the work that you've done since, how much has that idea influenced the work that you've worked on ever since, this idea of creating a South African identity?
It's always been.
Okay.
Always. Every production that I write, I always do that.
Okay. That's cool, because I would love to actually see that first production, because, you know, I have no idea what that one is like. Have you ever thought of bringing that first one back, the first South African?
No, the first one was The Sacrifice of Kelly.
Okay, that you read.
The first South African was the second one. And it was also based on a true story, because there was a lady here in Langa
mm-hmm.
who gave birth to a child with a German guy.
Okay.
And he was white physically, blonde, blue eyes, but he grew up in Langa.
Mm-hmm.
And when the system saw him in the schoolyard, because in those days, there were white people who were running the township of Langa for the city of Cape Town. Mm-hmm. So they had thought that that child in the schoolyard was one of their kids.
Mm.
So that was the maid. So she was sent by Mr. Rogers to go and take the child out of the school so that he doesn't disturb. But when she got there, she realized that the child doesn't belong to any of the white families. So she had to go back and tell her boss. And then it became a case with the police where they were looking if there was a missing white child anywhere, because there was a white child in Langa.
But in the meantime, he belonged there.
Yes, but eventually they then had to go to the teacher and say, whose child is this? And then they told her, his mother lives here in Brinton.
Okay.
And she was also working for one of the white families as a maid. So when her madam heard the story that she had a child with a German guy, she was fired, because she said, if you've slept with a white man, what will stop you from sleeping with my husband? But the most important thing about the first South African was, here was a man who was born physically white, was reclassified as a colored, but is black at heart, mm-hmm. because he grew up in Langa, and yeah. he was circumcised with all the other black children in Langa. So you can understand, for him being black, that was who he was disregardless of how he looked.
Yeah. I would love to see you bring that one back. I'm very curious to see how you would restage it. Now, also because between, you know, at that point you had just written it, now you can actually direct it as well.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. It's always lovely talking to you, but that's what we have time for.
Okay, no problem.
So thank you so much for speaking to us, and I will catch you at the theater.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Let's take a quick break while I line up the next guest.
Sugar, I call my baby my sugar. I never maybe my sugar. That sugar baby of mine, he's special ration for me. He never asks for my money. All that I give him is honey, and that he can spend any time. I'd make a million trips to his lips if I were a bee, because he's sweeter than chocolate candy to me. He's confectionery sugar. I never cheat on my sugar, 'cause I'm too sweet on my sugar. That sugar baby of
mine. The 1920s jazz standard Sugar, which Billie Holiday actually recorded in 1939. I mentioned the 1920s link, though, because the next guest is going to talk about something that links back to 1923. Judge Rehana Parker is a practicing lawyer for more than 30 years now. She's the founder of several organizations, including the first awards program that recognizes the contribution of women in law. The Women in Law and Leadership Academy is the first of its kind in Africa, basically. Now, she's been instrumental in putting together an exhibition that is running here at the Artscape Theatre for the month of August, which marks 100 years of women lawyers in South Africa. Hello, Rehana, and welcome to the Women's Zone Hour.
Hi, good afternoon. Oh, I'm feeling great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. The Artscape is full of people, and there's all sorts of really interesting things to look at, including this exhibition that you've been working really hard to get off the ground. So first question is, well, how did you get involved with this exhibition?
Oh, thank you. Yes, we've launched the Wars of Women in Law Awards. It's an awards to recognize the trailblazers, the history makers, the change makers of women in the legal profession over the last 100 years. And in the awards program, we would recognize and award women on a nomination basis annually. So what we've done is through the South African Women Lawyers Association, they put together 44 iconic women from 1909 to present. There are far more than 44 iconic women in law, but not everyone's biographies or histories has been written up. So we've used the top selection of the top 44 that we know of, and we're still waiting for more women to come forward with their change-making biographies over the last 100 years. So with the 100-year celebration and the milestone of showing courage and strength, challenges and trailblazers of women in law, it spans quite a number of significant women. It started way back in 1909 and 1912 when Sonia Schlesien, who was the law clerk to Mahatma Gandhi, when she tried to get admitted to the profession. And of course, she was denied to do so. And then it was Madeleine Wookie, who in her struggle for women's rights, in her plight was in 1912, she went to court actually. And unfortunately, she said the judge had found in that case that the definition of the word persons applied to male only. I know we can laugh about it today.
Wow.
If you think of that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, she even had to pay the Law Society's costs because she lost the application. So that's the very early trailblazers who were never really admitted. And then remarkably, in South Africa and India, because we had the same colonial power in power in South Africa as India, they then quite correctly brought about an act. And that act then allowed for women to be admitted in the profession. So we're going back to 1923. Mm-hmm. Irene Antoinette Geffen, she became the first woman to be admitted to the bar. So we, India and Pakistan, we share the same celebration. So that brings us to the milestone for women in law in South Africa to 2023, where we are. But of course, you surely want to hear, and listeners, I'm sure you want to hear, but what happened between Geffen and today? Well, let me tell you, in the early days between 1923 and 1994, not much happened, despite women being admitted to the profession. Now, of course, we know that the answers to that, probably, it's that the culture wasn't there to promote women having businesses and a career. But there are two remarkable women that stand out. The one is Zainunnisa Sesigul.
Mm-hmm.
She was an activist who gained her first degree in a Master's of Arts at UCT. Now, that was remarkable. She was the first person of color to obtain such a degree. And then later, at the age of 65, and that was way back in 1962, she was admitted to the bar. Not long after that, she unfortunately passed on. So we didn't really see Sissy Gould much as a lawyer, but we all know her as an activist. Then, following her very, very shortly in her footsteps, we have Desiree Ficker. Desiree Ficker was born in Umtata, a domestic worker who then became admitted as the first African, so to say, in that definition, as an attorney. Strangely, you know, between 1923 and 1994, there was only one woman appointed to the bench. That was Justice Leonora van der Heever.
But that's
so
kind
nothing
of,
much happened.
Yeah, that's not that long ago, is it?
No, it's not. And, yeah. and I need to be able to distinguish between what happened pre-1994 and post-1994, because there is a remarkable difference in the time periods. So in 1994, we then see the second woman, judge, she's now retired, Traverso. Jeanette Traverso was appointed to the Western Cape High Court here in Cape Town. They held the space for a long time. I would say those were the only two, inverted commas, white women who were appointed, I would say, between 1923 and 1994. Most of the strides or the significant strides for women and women of color, or women of any color for that matter, happened post-1994. We then see Judge Pillay, we see all the familiar faces that we now see on the bench, including the Deputy Justice, Maya. From 1994, I would say about, not 1994 exactly, but probably around about 1998 to present, we probably have the majority of at least 50 or more judges being appointed.
But that's quite recent. So things are starting to change now, especially for black female lawyers. So as the founder of the Women in Law and Leadership Academy, you really look at recognizing people. But let's talk about the importance of mentorship in law, especially to women. And, you know, does it have to be women who are acting as the mentors?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the issue of mentorship is key. And I say that because while we try to develop a cadre of women to be trained, we do offer support to ensure that candidates are well equipped when accepting nominations. So the argument often goes that there aren't enough women who are suitably qualified or have the experience to accept these key leadership positions. So what we as WOSA do is provide try to provide a platform where we can provide mentorships to young and old, for that matter, and those aspirant women who want to enter into a career in law or aspire to become a judge, to have the necessary tools to be able to navigate what is still a very much male-dominated career.
Okay.
Or profession.
All right, so anybody who wants to find out a bit more should actually come down to Artscape during the month of August, take a look at the exhibition, and I am assuming you have got your contact details up with the exhibition.
Oh, definitely. It's all there on the flyers. We've got a QR code, so it's very simple. They'll just have to scan, and it takes you right to the website.
That's great.
Yeah, what is important is, and I think I need to leave with this parting shot. Despite the significant strides that we have made for women in law, we are, and despite some of us or some in the profession having broken the glass ceiling, there still remains a concrete ceiling. Why do I say a concrete ceiling? And that is because key leadership positions still remain male. The only sector within law that has really progressed significantly is that of the law faculties at universities. They have certainly ensured that they've championed women in key positions. Unfortunately, our bench isn't quite there yet. Only about 32% of women on the bench are women. And I'm talking about, and now when I'm talking about key leadership positions, I'm talking about being the judge president of a division or the chief justice of South Africa. As you are aware, that is still very much male dominated.
Yeah.
Yeah, here comes the challenge. It's not only the profession that can make a change. Civil society and advocacy groups have a role to play. Mm-hmm. So if a position becomes available and it says the next chief justice or a board position, whether it's in your company or it's in the public space, advocacy groups alongside with civil society and the profession need to advocate and caucus really hard to push that candidate so that we get through that concrete ceiling and not just break the glass ceiling.
Okay, so like as Marlene LeRoux says, be the change you want to see.
Absolutely, be the change that you want to see. I simply love that. And the theme to today, the milestone being celebrating, supporting, empowering women of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So let's look at tomorrow and the future.
Okay, thank you so much for making the time to talk to us, and we'll be seeing you around Artscape.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Oh, yes, please come around to the stall and have a look at some banners and see who are the women of the future and, of course, the women of the past.
It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees. They're putting up reindeer, singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away. Snow here stays pretty green. I'm gonna make a lot of money, then I'm gonna quit this crazy scene. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I hit a river so long. I will teach my feet to fly. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I made my baby cry. Hard to help me, you know it put me at ease, and it loved me so naughty, made me weak in my knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But I'm so hard to handle, I'm selfish and I'm sad. But I would have lost the best baby that I ever had. Oh, I wish I had. Skate away on. I wish I had a river so long. I would teach my feet to fly.
And we're back. I am Teresa Smith, and this is the Woman Zone Hour. You just listened to Sarah McLachlan do River, which is the Joni Mitchell standard, actually. Now, Sarah did this on an album called Rarities, B-Sides and Other Stuff, which has some not easily found rarities on it, like Sarah doing a duet with Emmylou Harris. Some of the rarities you will see at Artscape Theatre this August, though, include a crocheted blanket depicting Table Mountain. It's Knit Wits Project, made for the 67 Blankets Local is Lekker Push, to collect blankets for people in need. So the tapestry hangs at the far end of the marble foyer, and to get to it, you have to walk through the Karen Bester exhibition, She Had a Name 365, which is an audio-visual installation about the effect of GBV on women. On the opposite wall is where you find the Women in Law exhibition. Our next guest is someone who has visited the Artscape Theatre to do a presentation and will return again on 26 August for something similar. Hayley Philander is the co-founder of mentoring program ICU. Hello, Hayley, and welcome to the Women's Zone Hour.
Thanks so much, Teresa. Thanks for inviting me.
So let's just dive right in. Why did you and your co-founder start ICU?
So ICU was founded in response to frustration. Both my co-founder, Cara Nelson, and I had the lack of access to opportunity for young women on the Cape Flats. We have a core shared belief that everyone, you know, has been created with value and worth and purpose. And so we began this journey of exploration. How do we nurture the value and worth of marginalized young women, and so that it's reflected back to them and then they are able to step in their purpose? So we began what we call 100 conversations. It's actually coffee, an excuse for coffee, but we spoke to youth development specialist and educational specialist and HR execs in the retail sector who were hiring young women from the Cape Flats, and obviously had challenges with that, because we wanted to find out what were the stats not telling us, you know, the dropout stats, the unemployment stats. And so during these engagements, we were made aware of the challenges that these young women faced, the cycles that kind of were perpetuated in the communities they found themselves in, and the self-sabotage that happens as a result of that. So, you know, there's lots of training that was being done for young people, and we realized that if we were looking to initiate sort of long-term impact, we would need a journey that was not training and that was slightly longer. So this wasn't going to be a quick fix solution. And during our time, as we were growing up, we were beneficiaries of some form of mentoring. It wasn't structured. By older, more experienced women who assisted us during, you know, the challenging times of motherhood and even when I started university. And so we realized that this could be an option. And we derived our name from one of our participants in our pilot who said she felt seen for the first time. And we realized that during our time of mentoring, that's exactly how we felt, you know, that our worth and our value was nurtured and we felt seen. And so we started very sort of haphazardly writing the curriculum as we go along. But in essence, today we have a 3-year mentoring program that is designed for young women on and from the Cape Flats. And we walk alongside them from grade 10, 11, 12. And even now, our alumni, we're still walking along some of them. And our vision is to connect young women from the Cape Flats to opportunity.
Okay. So you recently did a presentation at the Women's Zone Library Hub, and you'll be hosting another one at Artscape Theatre on 26 August. So what can attendees expect from that?
So I think the women who will join us on that morning will hear the story of ICU. And what is great about this story is that it's outgrown Karen and myself. So they'll hear from our program manager, Renee, who is the mother hen. And they'll hear from our alumni, and they'll also be able to connect with our alumni and chat. And so that's great. It's always great when our amazing young women find their voices and are confident to share. And then also we'll give them a bit of a taste as to what we do in our sessions. So we'll run a mini session with the women as participants, and myself and Renee and the alumni as the mentors. Facilitating it.
So who does your organization actually serve? Are you angling towards the young women in need of mentorship, or are you angling towards the people who could possibly be the mentors?
So we're probably looking at people, not only mentors, and I'll tell you how people can get involved later, because we actually partner with schools. And that's the school liaisons identify the candidates, and then we obviously they make application and we interview them. So we do partner with schools, and we found that that's the best way, because then there's not just ICU. You know, it really does take a village to help our young women access their dreams and ambitions. And so we like working with the schools. We currently have 3 partner schools. Yeah, so we work together. But we're probably looking more at expanding opportunities for young women on our program. And so anyone who's able to accommodate job shadows, like our grade 11s have just completed or busy completing their job shadows. They do a psychometric assessment in grade 11, and then they identify 2 job shadows that they would like to participate in. And so we're getting more and more interesting jobs. So obviously growing that network, so we have a database we can access. And then any post-school learnerships and internships, because often our girls, you know, they're not necessarily like 18-year-olds are, not necessarily what they want to know, what they want to do, even though they've been through the process. Yeah. And we're finding because we partner with a technology innovations company also, that when they offer internships, when there is an internship, or, you know, it gives the kids their upskilling. They're not sitting at home, because we don't want them to sit at home if they're uncertain.
Yeah.
And so we're always looking for those opportunities. 2 of our alumni this year, they did educational learnerships with WCED.
Okay.
And yeah, and they're going to study next year because they were rewriting. So it's having that plan, you know.
Or helping them figure out the plan.
Exactly. And then we're also looking for mentors for our alumni who are in similar career fields. So we currently have 1 second year doing social work, 1 second year doing BCom, a second year doing international relations, and then we have first year doing education. You know, so it's finding also women who can meet them in whatever form that looks like, just to encourage them, because we know also it's quite hard and we're not resourced, even though we do maintain contact, to support them fully. You know, between that university years, especially when they're living in res, you know, even though our second years have done very well, and because they're at Stillies, but still, we know that there are challenges. And so it'd be great if we have women who are willing to check in with our girls, our alumni. So that's also great. And then the other thing, Teresa, which we're finding, especially post-COVID, because there were obviously academic gaps.
Yeah.
And they have tried to address it in the last 2 years. But we aren't educators. So anyone with time and expertise to help with academic support, you know, in terms of tutoring or helping with maths and science and life sciences, that's always very welcome. Because we're finding that, yeah, that would definitely assist our girls' academic support. And then, of course, if you're aware of any funding opportunities.
Always. That's always an issue, yes.
Always. Unfortunately, it's, you know, the story of nonprofits, and or if you wish to make a donation yourself.
So how would people contact you for either that or to say, I'd like to come and check you out on the 26th of August?
So I think the best way is to actually, we've invited to have a stall on the 9th of August at the Artscape Women's Humanity Festival. And we'll be there and we'll take their details. Or alternatively, you know, if someone is unable to attend, they can email me on hayley@icu.org.za. And I will definitely follow up with them.
Right. So you are here today, or email hayley@icu.org.za. Thank you, Hayley, for explaining that. And I look forward to seeing what you're going to do on the 26th.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Teresa. Yeah, and thank you for supporting our work.
I'm slowly becoming accustomed to the changing patterns of my face, not having observed printed through the middle years, transforming the form of my features, presenting a picture of who, what I am now, leaving me bemused as I recollect imprints of patterns of
The song you just heard was by Melanie Scholtz. It features Mark Fransman, and it's off the album Freedom's Child, which was a collaboration with the poet James Matthews. She was singing, I'm slowly becoming accustomed to the changing patterns of my face, which definitely feels like something a poet would write. So to come back full circle to where I started explaining what Women's Zone does at Artscape, we do book launches, which when we host very popular authors, it's always fun to see how many people come. But by far the most well-attended sessions are actually the poetry sessions. One poet who got up, book in hand, with no mic, and blew people away with the power of her verse is Lebo Mashifane, who performed two of her works on the Women's Humanity Walk today. Hello, Lebo, and welcome to the Women's Zone Hour.
Hey, Teresa. It's good to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so let's just start at the beginning. Self-publishing, it's just so hard. And poetry is a very niche part of literature. But what was the experience like for you publishing an actual book of poetry, which you called Pieces of Expression?
Oh, my goodness. Actually, it was a long journey. It took 7 years of writing. So you can imagine the journey there. And many, many possible ways of even trying to publish it. And when I learned that publishers out there are actually taking about 70% and the writer gets 80%, that's when I realized that this is not gonna go for me, you know. So eventually I found ways to just do it myself, and I think that has been the greatest blessing ever.
So how do you actually use this poetry book? Do you only perform, or do you just go forth and do other stuff and say, yeah, by the way, you know, buy my book, please?
So what I also do, of course, it is part of my creative entrepreneur path as well. So having to make sales from the book is quite interesting, but also using the book as a movement as well, you know, to heal or share stories with other people. You know, I actually use the book to tell my story as well, because this book, when I published it, it's when I was actually planning to leave Earth. So this was supposed to be like a parting gift But hey, because I'm still here today, you know, it's like a birth certificate. So it's been a journey, right? So just using this book as well to talk to other people, you know, try talking people out of whatever circumstances that they could be facing, depression particularly, you know, and people who just feel like it's the end for them, you know. I've been there as well, but I'm still here today and I'm telling my story through this book. And another thing is that the book is currently only in a hard copy in print because I want the back cover to also be a communication for creatives and artists and art collectors. It's a brand that actually speaks to the art world in general and globally, because I mean, this book showed me flames. It went to Germany during lockdown when I couldn't even come to Cape Town, you know, but hey, there's motion in the ocean, right?
It turns out, yes. So you mentioned, you know, movement. So I know that you are also working on an annual collective publication which will be titled Imagining a Queer and Black Institution. So who are you working with on that?
So that's another global publication that we have. We started it with some writers and creatives in South Africa, in Cape Town, actually, who also branched from other places in South Africa. Christie's from Durban, but now based in Cape Town. Siv is from Gqeberha and is in Cape Town or back in Gqeberha. I'm from Joburg and I was in Cape Town at the time. And we met with Musoke and Monganyende, who are from Amsterdam or based in Amsterdam, but their roots also come from other places of Africa like Kigali and Uganda, I think. So yeah, that has been a great experience as well. And we're looking at having other writers as well to join us in future in other annual publications to also tell their stories of how they imagine a Black and queer institution as well.
And when you say publication, as in a hard copy someone can actually physically read?
Yes, so far it's that we just had our what I'd call a blueprint for now, or our prototype, which was done by A4 Foundation also in Cape Town. And we're still working on how to get funding to actually get it as an actual product that can also be viable annually as different volumes with different other voices coming in and telling what it is for them to imagine what it is to be Black and queer as an institution as well. Because we're sort of trying to steer away from the current system of how things are, which seem very, I don't think chauvinistic is what I want to say, but yeah, along those lines, you know, of it seems very white supremacy and
not
very,
your story actually.
And not our story, right? Because as particularly from an African perspective, we operate differently. We are different people and it's more spirit first than anything first, right? Mm-hmm. Even though now we all have to operate in a money first world, we need to balance these worlds. We need to balance what is self saying to us. You know, I need to first check in with myself. How am I feeling? Mm-hmm. Can I rise to the occasion? And then how do I move forward in how I need to live in this current world? World where I need to pay bills and I need to have money to survive. And also, I believe lockdown showed us flames when there were no bread in the shelves in the shops, but our pockets were filled with money, but we couldn't do anything with it, you know. Yeah.
Okay, so now you just came back from the walk and you performed at the Cenotaph. So could you actually read us something that for those of us who missed out on the actual walk?
Okay, so this piece is actually a piece that I was performing at the War Memorial, where it's at a statue that actually speaks more of victory and peace. So the piece that I'm sharing also, which is from my book, Pieces of Expressions, and I hope people actually come and buy the copies. I'm here and let's take pictures, let's sign. I'm actually interested now at giving out hand-signed copies at
cool.
the moment.
Okay.
So the piece that I'll be sharing is more on victory and speaking to everyone, you know, suffering battles out there. So here it goes. Their screams echo in our voices. Their blood stains our history. It is black. Consciousness. Note to the oppressor. Just when you thought you had removed them from the face of existence, you only touch the surface. For roots run deeper and blood thicker. They visit us in different realms. They are forever our leaders. Those who felt the heat of the struggle, slit throats, the solution was not to gurgle. As they stumble, fall, rise, their vision was not to mumble, fumble on their dreams. Let's be humble. Let's leave drugs and beat drums for the warriors of our land. For we are now inferior free. Unleash any trap, barrier, or band beyond Long Street and Jersey Bree. Streets be now covered in dirty sneakers, dancing to this drum beat. They want to take and claim, but our souls they can beat. I repeat, this rhythmic I mimic not. If they fought, yes, they fought. They fought for we not to be drug possessed or in the act be caught. We have a chance not to be in prison bars or cuffed in stands. Life is forever tough. If we continue to numb the pain, we shall forever in incarceration remain. Young one, get up and turn around. From your pain and struggle, you're not solely bound. I too have found deafening noise in my sound of resentment and rage, leaving me deranged. I thought it would have never changed. But if they could break free from their mental chains, so can we be free from our mental strains. Together we are strong and our character we can polish. Self-defeat and hatred we now abolish. Oh no, we're not good enough for nothing. If you don't believe me, here's something. Think of the breath you've breathed, the silence you've seized. For you are a blessing in a seed. If in the wild you're caved, then here, child, you are now saved. Allow yourself to open to this love. Just for once, rise above. Look at thee next to thee, smile and find peace. Let your cheeks reveal their sheen. Let love's light be your beam. It's time we acquire natural independence and no longer bottle our burdens under wet pillows and carpets in which we sweep. Let's hold hands and support battles we can't handle. Our generation loses the drug, depression and death saga scandal. Right here, right now. So one day we can reminisce on how we came dear. To defeat fear. Rise up, Mo Africa. Rise up, Mo Africa. Thank you.
Thanks, Lev. It's always great to hear you do your own work. And I will be looking out for you at the next Women's Own Book Club meeting.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. I'm still around. Books are here. Come through, come through, come through.
That's all we have time for. So with that, thank you, FMR, for making this time available to us. And thank you, Mwande, who is like the coolest sound engineer ever. It's always fun working with you. Also, thanks our Women's Own founders, Nancy Richardson and Bethel Eichenberger, for making space for the women of Cape Town and our stories. I am Teresa Smith, and it was my pleasure to host this annual Women's Own Hour. Be sure to listen out for the podcast of this program on the FMR website, as well as on the Women's Own website, womenzoneCT.co.za, where it sits with a long list of podcasts telling the stories of some of the amazing women in Cape Town. Thank you and goodbye. FMR 101.3